Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, Anbar province has been gripped by deadly violence since Monday last week after Iraqi police and army forces dismantled an anti-government protest camp in Ramadi, which according to Maliki had been a breeding ground for the pro-Al-Qaeda militants. Now, apart from Syria, the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL, is now also operating in Iraq, and Maliki is emphatic about stopping them. Welcome back. Now, today we'll be discussing Al-Qaeda attack in Western Iraq. And in order to do so, I'm delighted to be joined by two guests. Now, here in the studio, we have the pleasure of being joined by a well-established and professional journalist. Mr. Hamid Golpira, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Well, hello, how are you doing? And thanks for inviting me to the show.
Thanks very much, Hamid, for coming over. Now, Hamid Golpira is, as I said, senior editor. Of course, I didn't say that. I said he's a well-established and professional journalist, and he, of course, is. And he's also a senior editor, columnist, and reporter of the Tehran Times. His articles really stand out, some of which have been translated into several languages, including, of course, German and Russian. Now, crossing over to our London studio, I'm delighted to be joined by an established analyst and scholar, Dr. Adnan Al-Qadida. It's a great pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Thank you very much. Welcome to you.
Thanks very much for being with us. Just a brief introduction of Dr. Al-Qadida. Actually, Dr. Al-Qadida is a deep analyst and thinker on Islamic issues as well as current issues affecting the world of Islam. So he's basically also a political analyst. Time for a short break.
Iraq has been the scene of anti-government protests since December 2012 after the arrest of the guards of the then finance minister Rafael al-Assalbi on terrorism-related charges. The protesters alleged that the arrests were made on sectarian grounds and demanded an end to anti-terrorism laws. They also staged a sit-in at Ramadi blocking the highway. All along, however, the Iraqi government went on saying it was up to parliament to decide on abolishing those laws. A year on, in a related development on Saturday, 28 December, Iraqi military and security forces detained lawmaker Ahmed al-Alwani, a prominent supporter of an anti-government protest camp situated on a highway near Ramadi, at his home in Ramadi on terrorism charges. During the raid, Alwani's brother as well as five of his guards were killed. Eight other guards were wounded, while 10 members of the security forces were also wounded. The following evening, an Iraqi Defense Ministry spokesperson said on state TV that local Sunni leaders and clerics had agreed to peacefully end the 12-month sit-in at the Ramadi protest camp after the Iraqi government had warned them that the camp was a potential shelter for Al-Qaeda. The following day, Iraqi security forces dismantled the Ramadi protest camp. However, police special forces units came under fire when trying to enter the camp. In the ensuing clashes, at least 10 people were killed and a number of police vehicles were attacked and burned. Several hours later, in reaction to the violence in Ramadi, some 40 Iraqi members of parliament belonging to a Sunni political violence offered their resignations, demanding the withdrawal of the army from Ramadi and the release of Ahmed al-Alwani. In the meantime, the violence spread to Fallujah, and a subsequent withdrawal of security forces from areas of both cities cleared the way for Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, that is the ISIL, to move in. The two cities in Anbar province have since then been the scene of clashes between security forces and Al-Qaeda-affiliated militants. All in all, the security situation in Iraq in 2013 has been quite worrying. The United Nations mission to Iraq says violence claimed the lives of 7,818 civilians in 2013, the highest annual death toll in years. The UN figures issued Wednesday last week gave a total of 759 people killed in December alone, including 661 civilians and 98 members of the security forces. To sum up, over 8,000 people were killed across Iraq in 2013, and unfortunately, the new year 2014 doesn't seem to offer much respite to the Iraqis either.
Hello and welcome back. It's great to have you with us. Now, before we talk about this recent violence in Iraq and the attack of Al-Qaeda-linked group ISIL, let's talk a little bit about the situation of Iraq last year, Dr. Al-Qaeda. We know that violence in Iraq last year reached a level not seen since 2008, when the country was just emerging from a brutal period of sectarian killings. Now, we have some very shocking figures, Dr. Al-Qaeda. According to the UN, at least 8,000 people have lost their lives in violence-related incidents in Iraq in 2013. This figure is very worrying, isn't it?
Yes, thank you very much. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This figure, and even one drop of blood of one innocent child, is worrying. And if we look at the history of Iraq, this violence and the bloodshed is not new. We had this for over 1,000 years now. But in recent history, we all remember Saddam and his regime and the bloodshed over 3 decades of innocent people Saddam killed from his army, from his people, chemical weapons, and this is going on. So last year, if you remember last month, yes, how many innocent people, not armed, going to Ziyarat Imam Hussein, they were bombed, killed, and for no reason. So this is a struggle. It's been going for a long time. We are used to it, and we know who is doing it. But I mean, at last, the government made a move. We think it is a bit late, but it's still better than nothing to control that area where all the violence is coming from.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we know that since last December, Iraqi Sunni Muslims have staged sit-ins in tents in several provinces, including, of course, Anbar, to denounce a perceived anti-Sunni discrimination by the al-Maliki government. Now, Hamid, the question I'd like to put to you is that how these apparently peaceful sit-ins turn into violence and al-Qaeda leadership headquarters, to quote Maliki?
Well, I mean, I myself don't know for sure that this is a protest camp did turn into some kind of al-Qaeda base, but I mean, maybe it did or maybe it didn't, but whatever the case is, like the Sunni Arab citizens of the country have to have the right to express their opinion, and if they want to protest against the government peacefully and things like that, that must be allowed. But at the same time, yeah, you have these infiltrators doing all these actions, and so that's a problem. That's a problem too. But
these sit-ins, Hamid, actually they've been there for about a year, and after a year they turn into what we are seeing at the moment, and the government took action.
Big problem happening. Well, so the government must handle it correctly too. That okay, they're a Shia government. Used to have a Sunni government, and some people are not happy about that, but at the same rate, the country is over 60% Shia. It's more likely than not to have a Shia majority parliament. So I mean, people have to accept that's just a fact of demography and something that's likely to happen. But at the same rate, they must appear fair to all the other different groups, whether Kurds or Christians or Sunni Arabs. So. This is a point too.
So are you trying to say that ISIL actually doesn't have any popular support from
I don't think they have any popular support. I mean, like, they have hardly any popular support, probably. I mean, like I said, the country is 20% Kurds. They don't support them. And any of the 60% Shia Arabs, they don't support them. 2 or 3% some other minorities like Christians and so forth. I mean, they're being persecuted by them. They don't support them. Maybe 17-18% Sunni Arabs, I mean, of them, I don't think 10% or 5% of them would even support them. That leaves 1% support. And there might be a couple other disaffected Sunni Arabs that are confused about some issue that might lean toward them, but I don't think they have more than 1% support. So if they're trying to make some kind of uprising, you can't have an uprising with 1% support and say, okay, we're going to like rule the country or something. So what's really happening? I mean, I think the lower ranking soldiers, there's a difference between them and like some of the leadership. Actually, the lower ranking, those members of these militant groups and so forth, there are some of them, I think, just not very educated. Mm-hmm. They don't know what's going on. They think they're having some kind of uprising. But I think some of the leadership are actually perhaps infiltrated spies that want to like divide the country and divide the Islamic world. Because the country of Iraq divided will not so much prosper, and a divided Islamic world will not prosper. So it's a kind of divide and rule and these kind of things and manage chaos kind of thing.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's go to London, where we're joined by Dr. Al-Qlida. Now, Dr. Al-Qlida, let's talk a little bit more about the fighters from the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL or ISIL. You know, whatever you call them, the thing is that they seem to be very rich and opulent. And I think we have to look at the ordeal of the civilians caught in the fight. We know that ISIL operate in both Iraq and the neighboring Syria. So how coordinated are ISIL activities in these two fronts, do you think?
Well, I want to say one thing that my colleague just said. It's a Shiite government. If you notice that it's not a Shiite government, about 10 or 11 ministers of the government are Sunni, and more of the Kurds. So actually, calling it a Shiite government is only in respect of that no Shia was participating in any government before. But now it's almost equality, not even equality. So the deputy prime minister is Sunni. The head of the parliament is Sunni. The president is Sunni Kurdish. So it's not really fair to say it's a Shiite government. But the minority are used to be like masters for the 80% majority of Shia and Kurd. And that's not going to go back to that. About the coordination, yes. I think the tactic that those insurgents using is to hit and hide. They cannot withhold any area or camps. So what they are doing, they are hiding with the civilians. And they used those camps over the last 12 months to maybe dig some tunnels, to prepare places for them to hide. So when the army goes in, or the security forces goes in now, they hide. And then as soon as they get any chance, they control the city. And I must say, it's not all the Sunni Arabs. Many of those Sunni tribes are asking and begging for help from the army and from the government to help them, because they are suffering on the hands of those insurgents.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. I just want to make one point clear. Probably our guest in the studio, Hamid, was mentioning the Shia government. Probably he was referring to the prime minister, who actually has the major power. Probably you were referring to that. Yeah. But I think it's also quite fair to say that the Majlis speaker is Sunni, the president is Sunni.
It is a kind of mixed government, but the majority of parliament and so is Shia. So it's seen as that. But they do have representation of the other peoples in the country. So I don't want to say it's completely a Shia government, but...
Right. Thank you very much indeed for that. And we're going to take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking a bit more about this terrorist group, organization, what do we call it. And also we'll be talking about what they're doing and why a number, even a small fraction of the Sunni population probably at the beginning supported them. So we'll be talking about that and more after this short break. Hello again and welcome back. We're talking about the current situation in the Anbar province and the two cities which are affected by the Al-Qaeda militant link attack. Now, we know that the opposition held areas of northern and eastern Syria have actually seen a whole lot of crimes, including a wave of kidnapping over the past 6 months that has targeted journalists, aid workers and activists. And we know that Al-Qaeda linked groups are suspected of being behind many of the abductions and other crimes. Particularly ISIL have been upbraided frequently for their atrocities. In fact, ISIL has got such a bad name that certain opposition factions in Syria try to distance themselves from ISIL, and some even talk of the start of a revolution against ISIL. And we know that during the infighting, a number of them has also been killed. Now, Hamid, the question I'm going to put to you is that this really bad name and the fact that they've been upbraided, they've been criticized for their atrocities, should have given a hint to even a very small minority of the Sunni population who supported them.
Well, I think so, but I mean, everyone is not going to get it all the time. So it's a problem, but people should come around to understand things. These kind of attacks on civilians, destabilizing everything. This is not an Islamic movement, like so. If one wants to have an Islamic movement, there are things one does, try to get popular support. Or if they actually have a grievance with some armed group or army, they're supposed to engage armies. They're not supposed to be like terrorizing civilians. That's not halal, that's not permitted in Islam. You know, that's not, or this stuff like killing off Christians or Shia or some other minority, like this is not permitted in Islam. So, and it's dividing the Islamic world. In the end, they're helping the people who are the enemies of Islam and the enemies of the Islamic world. Like maybe, so, like I said, some of the lower soldiers don't know it, but I think some of the high-ranking people do know it. You know, I mean, like I said, even the name Al-Qaeda isn't supposed to be an inside joke, if you know. They say, like, okay, Al-Qaeda, they claim it means base camp, yes. Okay? But it also means database in Arabic. Okay, 30 years ago, the CIA had a list of their allies in Afghanistan, and bin Laden's name was on it, and the name of that list was the database. Database translates directly into Al-Qaeda in Arabic. So many people say from the beginning, the CIA and these people have been controlling the leadership of Al-Qaeda and some related groups. Maybe not the average foot soldier or so, but the leadership. And so
the thing is that everybody wants to distance themselves from this militant group because they've really got such a bad name.
Well, you get a bad name if you kill civilians and you do things like that and they kill off minorities or something, that's going to give you a bad name. But I mean, it seems like every single person hasn't distanced themselves. They still have some kind of membership, even if they don't have so much support. I don't know who is somehow joining them. But again, this is a problem, too, to understand. If one wants to be in some kind of Islamic movie, you can see, like, I don't know, the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt or Hezbollah of Lebanon and various other groups are following a different policy. You don't see them randomly killing civilians. You don't see them, you know, harshly oppressing minority groups. You don't see any of that stuff happen. You see them participating in electoral politics and they get votes, even if the election is later canceled, like in Egypt. They did get votes, the Muslim Brotherhood. They did get votes in the election, and they did win the presidential election.
Right.
So it's a different policy. It's a different way of going about things.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Now, we know that actually parts of Ramadi and Fallujah have been held by armed men for days. And I know that, Dr. Al-Khalida, you've been following the Iraqi developments since, several years ago. And I think that what's happening at the moment reminds us of the years immediately after the 2003 US-led invasion, when both cities in Anbar province were rebel strongholds. Is history repeating itself?
history actually is the same since Adam and Eve, in a way. So it's repeating itself, yes, it's the same, yes. It's a struggle between good and evil. But if they want to put things back to as it was, for those Ba'athis and those insurgents, clock cannot go back. They must admit and they must accept that they can live peacefully and in equality with all the other groups. Shiite, Kurdish, Arab, other minority, Christian. And I just want to like to add to what Mr. Hamid said.
Yes.
That they are in the name of Islam, those young people are used by, I think, by their own leaders to do anti-Islamic things, to hurt Muslim, to hurt Islam. And although they are sacrificing themselves, but not in a good cause, not to liberate their country, not to defend themselves, not to for justice and equality. So this is why they are opposite to what's happening in Lebanon or in Gaza. And that's why people are rejecting them.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Hamid, I'd like to talk about the concerns of some part of the population. We know that there is a segment, even a small segment of the population, who think that the government policies are favoring only one sect of the Iraqi population. Do you think that the Iraqi government has done enough to assuage, to relieve the concerns that government policies are not, in fact, favoring only one sect of the Iraqi society?
Well, myself, I think they do need to do more. You know, they do need to do more to make it, you know, this big tent, one big family of Iraq. It's really necessary to do, because if they don't do that, there's going to be a disaffected, you know, sectors of society, especially among the Sunni Arabs, you know, that they're in a different situation, whereas the Kurds are also, you know, less than the Shia Arabs, but they have a kind of, there's a Kurdish regional government area, although there might be problems there in the future too, because there's some dispute over Kirkuk and who should rule that, but they have a regional government, so they have an autonomous area, whereas like Sunni Arabs don't have an autonomous area. I don't think necessarily like some kind of federal system is the is necessarily a solution, but at the same rate, like things have to be done so that the Sunni Arabs feel okay, this is a fair, we're getting a fair deal from this system. I think there are some mistakes being made by the government, so they need to just be more inclusive, personally, I think.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Now, Dr. Al-Khalida, we're talking about the Iraqi government's policies, and we know that there are some concerns on the part of the Sunni minority in Iraq that government policies are not favoring them, rather they're favoring another sect of the Iraqi population. So how effective do you think government policies have been over the course of the last few years in order to actually relieve, to assuage the Iraqi Sunnis that the government is also for them?
I don't agree with that statement that in actual fact, the government is doing more than they should do. That is on the expense of the Shia. That is that they are doing things to make the other side acceptable to the new Iraq, but they shouldn't go out of their way to do that. Everyone, including the Kurds, including the Arab Sunnis, including the Shia, they should accept that a new message coming out of this land. Since the bloodshed of Imam Hussein, and until now, bloodshed is going on. All young people killed. A new message now should be acceptable by all, that a true Islam message coming from Iraq for peace, for love, and for justice. And if everybody accept that they are equal to the others and they shouldn't get their shares, or they shouldn't get into an equation of master and slave, we can live all in peace. There is more than enough for all the Iraqis.
Right.
So this is the new message, I think, coming from Iraq, from all this chaos.
Okay, but Dr. Al-Khalida, we know that there have been a number of cases, for example, the case with the ex-Iraqi finance minister who was a Sunni politician, and also the this most recent case, the Iraqi Sunni MP who was arrested in raid that killed seven. So what is your explanation of these two cases? I mean, apparently this has outraged the Sunni minority.
Yeah, they have no right. I mean, look, we all accept that there is now in Iraq a bit of disorder, financial problems, things. But no Iraqi should accept terrorism and killing innocent Iraqi people. And if a minister got some of his bodyguards involved in terrorism, he should accuse them. He should come to the government and tell them, look, some of my bodyguards without me knowing. Or if he is involved, he should be put on trial. The same thing with the MP they arrested. If he accept the arrest and come to the court, there would be no clash. He, with his brother and his bodyguards, start shooting, and they killed two from the Iraqi security forces. So what do they expect? And he's been away with the terrorists helping them for the last 12 months. And I saw him on television, the way he is talking. He's a pure criminal. He should be put on trial and hanged. Not only by the government, by his own tribes.
Right, but you mentioned the tribes. We know that the probably a large proportion of the tribes are in fact favoring the Iraqi government's policies, and they're fighting along with the Iraqi military against Al-Qaeda.
Absolutely. And those criminals supporting the Qaeda, supporting killing innocent people, should be accounted for their actions, whether they are MPs or like it was the vice president, Mr. Hashimi. There was no doubt, and there was a definite proof that he was involved in terrorism. How I don't understand how politicians can support him.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we'll take a short break. After the break, we'll have Central Stage online search for you. So please do stay with us. Welcome back. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken Central Stage online. So we're going to have a look at six web pages today, Hamid. The first one, as you can see, shows the Iraqi map, and those two, you know, red areas are the areas affected by this latest attack. So the basically the Anbar province, and I think Ramadi and Fallujah, they've always been troubled areas, haven't they, when we look back?
Well, yeah, there has been trouble there for all this time. And
right, okay. Unfortunately, this is, I think, the logo of the ISIL. I think what you can see on the board has nothing to do with their, you know, true nature. So let's go to our next web page. This is actually this, the Sunni MP who was arrested in a raid that killed seven. This is actually from the Independent, the UK Independent webpage. Do you know this gentleman?
I don't know all the details about him, so I'm not so informed about him. But I guess.
But I think Dr. Al-Khalida was saying that he'd listened to one of his, talks.
Okay, let's be very much against him. So
right. Okay.
I don't know what he said in this speech.
Great. Let's go to our next web page. This is from Al Jazeera, and you can see Al Qaeda linked fighters push into Iraqi city. So I think the extent of the violence is really, really quite extensive. And so let's hope that things calm down. Right. So I think heavy artillery are being used, and it's really a real war, I think, on the ground.
The Iraqi army is coming to deal with them, and problems are happening.
Okay, let's go to our next web page. This basically is from the ZDF website, and it shows, of course, I think these people, you can see they belong to ISIL. I think it's really interesting that they are all they cover their face and their, I mean, so as not to be recognized. I don't know why they're so afraid of being recognized by the people. It's a bit strange, isn't it?
People don't know who they are, but well, and so there were some incidents in Iraq when they uncovered them, they turned out to be British. If you remember that incident, there was one incident where some were pretending to be some kind of, you know, Islamic movement people, and they had the traditional, you know, Arab clothing, and yeah, and then when they were actually arrested, and then the foreign forces came, I think led by the British, and broke them out of prison. But that was a famous incident. I mean, I don't know if these are all like foreign agents or British agents or something, but. It has occurred in the past, and it has been proven that it occurred. Like that is not a dispute that happened. That really did happen. That these British agents were dressed up with this kind of traditional Arab gear and so forth, and were arrested with weapons and bombs, and then the British forces broke them out of prison.
Mm. It's a very precarious situation. Do you think that the British would go so far as to put their own
people
at risk?
Maybe this incident is not them, but right. I mean, it could be anybody. You know, it could be, you know, I don't know, CIA agents. It could be Mossad agents or allies of them. It could be Arab people allied with them, but maybe even not from Iraq. And a lot of these people are not from Iraq too. So that's kind of problematic too. Like if there's some kind of uprising in Iraq, like why should it be Saudis and people from all other countries coming, and the local people don't want to have an uprising?
It's
different if there were other people helping some locals that wanted to have an uprising. But if the people in the uprising are mostly not locals, it seems like, well, how come the locals don't want an uprising?
It must be difficult to fight with your face covered.
Well, this is the deal. They don't want people to know who they are.
Next web page. Okay, this is actually from Press TV. Iraqi security forces gain control over most of Fallujah. So this is some good news for the Iraqi government. And, right, I think we have one more website, if I'm not mistaken. Or probably this is the last. Let's check. So this is basically the last web page. No, there is one, I think, with the press. This is the one. Iraqi PM pledges to eliminate militants in Anbar province. So this is actually the last web page, and it shows Maliki actually. Seems quite emphatic about, you know, stopping Al-Qaeda. And I think, as Dr. Al-Khalida said, probably they've never been so emphatic about that. And now they've realized that it should do something. Yeah, and I think they've got wide international support as well. Great. So that was a look at some of the websites that took center stage over the course of the last week. Now, let's go to London, where we're joined by Dr. Al-Khalida. Dr. Al-Khalida, there is basically... you mentioned that the Iraqi government probably has done enough to assuage and relieve the Sunni opposition, that government policies are not favoring only one sect of the Iraqi society. But do you think that the Iraqi Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, will manage to defuse this latest simmering tension?
Well, I believe all the decent Iraqis, politicians and people and army, should get together to get rid of this, and for once and for forever, of those insurgents, as you said, coming from Saudi Arabia, from Jordan, and fighting against the Iraqi people. So if all the decent politicians and the Iraqi people come together, plus we need regional cooperation and international cooperation, because this terrorism is going to affect everybody. Now, it's affected Syria and Iraq, but it can spread to even to Europe. As my colleague said, there are people from 80 countries all over the world fighting in Syria now. So if they come to Iraq, and if they spread to the region, and then they come back to Europe, so Europe will not be away from this effect of terrorism. So it's beyond Maliki and beyond Iraq. It needs a worldwide cooperation, which I hope I can see it's coming, and there is a cooperation to get rid of terrorism in all the world.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. And Hamid, what do you think? I mean, this seems to be a very precarious situation. It seems to be a very worrying situation. Looking at the extent of the violence, probably we haven't seen that in years. Do you think that the Iraqi government will be able to handle this?
Well, they seem to have enough forces to do it. Like I said, what they must do is not get tricked, which maybe the whole process is some kind of trick to get the response of the Iraqi government in such a way that it would maybe anger the Sunni Arab community, maybe seen as a crackdown on Sunni Arabs and not like a crackdown on like a small, tiny minority of militants. And actually, I think that's what they're actually trying to do. Mm-hmm. They're trying to trick the government to do this kind of, to make this kind of mistake that would be them falling in the trap, and then they would create more disharmony and discord in the country, and maybe for themselves gain a few more recruits if it was seen to be a disproportionate response.
But so probably the government is not falling in that trap, because
so far they haven't.
We retreat and let the tribesmen together with the police forces mm-hmm. in those areas take control. So that's what the government is saying.
Well, that's what they want. And so far they haven't made a big mistake like so, but there is the danger that could happen. And I see, at least I think, that some of these militants and some of the foreign forces controlling them, that's what they're trying to do. And it would also create more instability in the country, that
right.
They're really trying to create instability mostly.
Okay. So, Dr. Khalida, we have just 1 minute for this last question. What's your prognosis of Iraq in 2014?
Well, I hope everybody will understand it's not a Sunni-Shia conflict. It's been over 10 years since Saddam gone. A lot of atrocities happened, a lot of killing of innocent people. Some politicians, they are putting one leg with the government, one leg with the terrorism. This is not going to carry on like this. They will be all accounted, because the blood of Iraqi people, of Iraqi children, is not cheap. And this, they will pay the price for it. And as I said, I hope the message of true Islam, justice, peace, and love, will come to all the world.
Thank you very much indeed for that. And Hamid, we have just about 40 seconds. Okay. So do you think that the year 2014 will be any different from the previous year, 2013?
Well, there's some possibility. I like to be optimistic and think that there's some possibility for some improvement in the country of Iraq. But also, like I said, I see there's also a possibility of danger, too, if everything is not played out just correctly. So hopefully everybody will play their cards right, whether they be the Sunni Arabs, the Sunni Shia, and the Kurds too.
Sorry, optimistic.
Well, I'm relatively optimistic, guardedly optimistic, but like I said, it depends on how all the different groups
and
leaderships.
So you mentioned guardedly and relatively, so probably you're not that
optimistic. Well, I'm not 100% optimistic. Well, I can't see into the future but over the very long term, probably things will work out over the long term, but over 1 year is a short term, so it's hard to exactly determine the direction.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Dr. Adnan Al-Khalida, deep analyst and thinker on Islamic issues and, of course, political issues in our London studio. And Hamid Golpira, established journalist and top writer working for Tehran Times and Press TV in the studio. Thanks very much indeed for coming on, for talking to us, and, of course, for those insights. Until next week, from me, our guest today, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much. It's great to have you with us. Thank you.